I'm Jennifer Dudley, and this is Fascinating Ordinary, where we get curious about everyday things that are actually amazing.
We're really glad you're here with us. Jennifer, which rabbit hole are we going down today?
Today, we're continuing our two-part episode on feeding kids. As a reminder, in part one, we talked about everything from human zygotes up until eating solid foods. And in part two, I'm going to lead us down a rabbit hole about feeding kids who eat solid food. If you haven't listened to part one, don't worry. These episodes are thematically related, but you don't have to listen in order to enjoy them both. So I want to start by telling you what this episode is not about. There's a lot of information about like baby-led weaning versus purees, introducing allergens, stages of introducing new foods, fruits or vegetables first. Like, this is not that. And I'm certainly not here to pick any side in a debate, but rather today I'm focusing on picky eaters. And I think this is an interesting topic that a lot of people, parents and non-parents, can sympathize with. So the first thing I want to say, and I'm going to say this over and over again, kids who are treated for quote unquote, I'm doing air quotes, kids who are treated for picky eating by their parents and medical providers tend to be healthy. They aren't malnourished. And so that means that picky eating isn't necessarily hurting kids. But I can attest as a wife, mother, friend, infrequent dinner party host, picky eating is annoying.
So it's not harming kids, like, physically in terms of their nourishment.
Mm-hmm.
Are we sure it's not harming them in other ways?
Yes, and we will learn so much more about that.
Great.
It'll be great.
But, yeah. Like, your kid is not in danger of malnourishment just because they are picky. There
exactly.
have to be other things going on.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Abby, do you know any picky eaters? Have you been a picky eater?
I have been told by my mother that there was a period of a couple of years where I would exclusively eat cheese.
Ooh, so that's not a bad thing.
No.
I
mean, see?
Yeah, I'm into it.
There we go. I don't remember that phase of my life at all. I feel like I have been a more adventurous eater later in life than I was earlier in life. I thought until 2 months ago that the one food I really couldn't stand was olives.
Mm-hmm.
And then like 2 months ago, I bought a jar of olives. I cannot remember for what purpose. But I was like, I should try these again just to see if I still don't like them. And it turns out I like olives. So I don't know. I think I've gotten less pickier over time. And now, like, that was the one thing that I used to tell when people would be like, oh, do you not eat any foods? They'd be like, olives, like, by themselves. If they're in something, I can stomach it. But, like, so now I like olives. So I think I'm less and less of a picky eater. The picky eater that I know the best is my brother.
Mm.
Or was my brother. He's more adventurous now in his adult life as well. But he would only eat things when they were covered in ketchup.
All right.
Like, for years.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, living in an old house and, like, pouring out ketchup for mm-hmm. this kid who just, like, would not eat pancakes without ketchup on them. Like, everything had to have ketchup. Shortly after he started that habit, his hair turned red, and we've always teased him that he just ate so much ketchup that his hair turned red. I have no idea if that's scientifically possible, but if it was, he was the test case. So, shout out to my brother Josh for keeping the ketchup industry running for a little while in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And shout out to all the picky eaters who have become less picky.
Because yeah.
that's a pattern I've definitely seen, like, for myself, for my brother. We got less picky over time.
Yeah.
Is that, like, a hopeful note that we can include somewhere in this episode?
I think this is a great place to include it. And then also, again, at the end, just the idea that, like, pickiness can be a transient state as opposed to a personal characteristic, like a defining characteristic. So I'm going to start with an extreme case from The Atlantic. This is from an article about parents with anxiety.
Okay.
Not specifically an article about, like, kids and their behaviors or mm-hmm. eating. And so this section is called Short-Term Gain, Long-Term Pain. And I'm going to send you a quote, but before I do, you'll want to know they mentioned something called the SPACE program in all caps.
Okay.
SPACE stands for Supportive Parenting for Anxious Childhood Emotions and is a parent-based treatment program for children and adolescents with anxiety, OCD, and related problems. This story is about parents, Angela and Seth, and their six-year-old son, Owen. And, of course, those aren't their real names. So, I have a quote for you to read.
Okay. All right, here's the quote. We all have dreams, and Angela and Seth was to stop making turkey loaf. By the time they sought help from the SPACE program last year, they had served it to their then six-year-old son, Owen, some 3,000 times. Put another way, virtually every day for 4 years, two-thirds of his life, Owen had eaten turkey loaf for both lunch and dinner. For breakfast, he favored dry Cheerios.
End quote.
Like, Cheerios at that point would be a welcome break from turkey
loaf. I want to cry for those parents, but also for Owen.
Yeah.
I've never had turkey loaf.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't sound that good.
No, and it gets worse. So, Owen is terrified of most foods.
Oh, gosh.
It's not just that he just loves turkey loaf.
Okay.
It's that he's terrified of new foods. He gags when he has to try a new food. If they fail to prepare turkey loaf one day, he throws fits. They once had to drive two towns over to buy ground turkey when there was a supermarket strike in their area.
Oh, my word.
Owen started his life with eating issues. He was in the NICU for a month because he refused to feed as a newborn. Mm. And then the anxiety spiral started for his parents.
Mm-hmm.
So something to note, the family and author says this was all made possible. Like, this life around turkey loaf was made possible in part because of staggered schedules. Seth would pick up Owen from school and feed him dinner, and then Angela would get off work, and Seth and Angela would eat dinner together.
Hmm. Not turkey loaf, though.
Presumably. Not turkey loaf.
Yeah.
So the author of the article and some research point to a very real and, like, very reasonable instinct to protect and provide for your kids.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the thing that's putting people into these situations.
Mm.
So I have another quote for you that starts,
If the instinct to protect a child leads many of us into the trap of overparenting, I've come to believe that time pressures keep us there. In conversation after conversation with parents who are struggling to reduce a child's dependency and fearfulness, rushed weekday mornings and evenings emerged as the crucible in which bad habits had formed. Yeah, I relate to that. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
Yep.
So families get into this because of some nugget of resistance from life, from the child, whatever. You know, you have a baby who can't eat some things or won't eat some things, and then pressure for time can sort of keep them in that anxiety spiral. Mm-hmm. I'm worried about what my kid is eating. They won't eat anything. I'm further worried about what they're eating. I want to point out again, this is an extreme story and one with a somewhat happy ending.
Oh, good.
After being treated at the space program, which I just love saying because it sounds like NASA, but
yep.
You know, okay. Owen moved from needing turkey loaf for two meals a day to being able to eat some other things some of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So at least they weren't bringing turkey loaf to restaurants, which was a real thing that they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
My husband, Kevin, and I like to point to this story and warn each other when maybe we're letting things get out of hand, particularly when we're using crutches that we think are making things easier for Luke, but they aren't making things easier for us.
Mm-hmm.
So there are two assumptions that I think pervade impressions about picky eaters that we're going to address here. First is that it's something inherent to the kid.
Mm.
And I think that attitude seems to be more common among parents of young kids, though that's my impression. That's not backed up by anything. Just this idea that, like, my kid is a picky eater or this kid is a picky eater. It's just who they are, as opposed to this is circumstance, or this is a transient state, a season in our life.
Mm-hmm.
The second assumption is that parents can just feed kids whatever they're eating when the parents are eating it.
Mm-hmm.
I think this comes from people who aren't necessarily, like, in the thick of it with young kids. People who intend to be parents included, or people who are, like, on the way to being parents included. We're going to start with that second assumption first. So, Abby, did you have a plan for feeding your two-year-old when you first, like, way back when you first started introducing solid foods?
Yeah, I think our main hope was to expose her to a lot of different kinds of foods.
Mm-hmm.
And I also hoped that she would be eating, like, dinner with us as a family. Mm-hmm. And so even though it was, like, she's not going to eat whenever we eat, like, it's not going to be, like, we all eat at the same time sort of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
if we can time one of her many meals to be around the same time when the rest of us are eating, that's great. Yeah, exactly. That'd be great. And I think I went in really aware that predictability was going to matter. So thinking about, like, if you put a handful of blueberries in front of a kid, every single blueberry tastes a little bit different, which is a really stupid thing about blueberries. Like, I love blueberries, but the little ones are so often, like, tart or sour, and then the big ones are, like, juicy, but then if they're too big, they, like, don't taste like anything except mush, and they're just... So you put a handful of blueberries in front of a kid, and that's, like... What am I supposed to do with this?
It's a roulette meal.
Exactly. It's just so unpredictable. And especially, like, having a child at the beginning of a pandemic, predictability was something I thought about a lot. So I think even when we started introducing solid foods, being like, okay, here are foods that are going to taste different every time she has them. Mm. And then here's something like a cracker. Like, every Cheez-It that you ever take out of a Cheez-It box is going to taste exactly the same. Or every Honey Nut Cheerio. Don't feed honey before the age of one. So every Cheerio, every Cheerio, and then eventually she really got hooked on the Honey Nut Cheerios after she turned one, right? But the idea of predictability was something that I was thinking about when we started introducing foods, partially because of, like, it's a pandemic and supply chain questions are really big right now, and will we be able to give her these things? I have no idea what you're going for with this question. Did I cover the answer?
Yeah,
okay, absolutely. All right, cool. So here we go.
Yeah, I love your answer. I love how much foresight you had. And I think I wonder if some of it has to do with the fact that you had a little bit of experience with younger kids before you had one.
Yeah, I worked as a nanny for a really long time. And then also I've been in the birth world for a really long time too. So I think I had a leg up on a lot of people in terms of just exposure to the information and the ideas that were out there, and having seen kids eat before and being like, oh gosh, this is not how this works, sort of a thing.
Yeah. Well, and you're... perfect description of why I'm suspicious of blueberries.
You too.
I love them. I absolutely love them. But yeah. I love one third of blueberries.
Which third?
The just ripe kind. The, like, tart ones are my second favorite. I don't dislike the tart ones. But the big flavorless mush ones make me regret. Like, I will be munching on blueberries and go, oh, I shouldn't have done this. I got one of these mush ones and it has ruined the experience.
That's tart ones for me. I'll save my tart ones for you from now on.
Okay, great. That,
we'll trade mushy and tart ones. Yep.
That's fantastic. Some of the cultural conceptions that we have around kids who are picky eaters are things like they put ketchup on everything. They only eat chicken nuggets. Mm-hmm. They only eat french fries.
Turkey loaf.
They only eat turkey loaf. Some of the reason for that is because of the consistency.
Predictability.
Yeah, consistency is a different issue.
But I knew what you meant. Like, just knowing what you're going to get. Like, knowing what it's going to taste like, what it's going to feel like in your mouth, what it's going to smell like. All that is so important.
Yeah. So the other thing that you picked up here, related to some of the decisions that you're going to have to make regarding feeding a child if you have one that is or someday will be weaned off of milk or is eating solid foods and milk, is, are you going to have set meal times, set meal places, and are you going to be eating meals together or separately? Mm-hmm. And so you had talked a little bit about you wanted to make sure at least one of the meals that your daughter had was with you and your husband.
Yeah, I just started with the assumption that she was going to eat a lot more meals than we were.
Yeah.
And then because I got sick shortly after she was born, really shortly before we started introducing solids, it turned out that we ate about the same number of meals, she and I. Yeah. So then she and I ate a lot of meals without my husband because he was, like, eating like a normal adult and eating, like, three meals a day or so. Mm-hmm. And I was eating, like, six or seven.
Push back.
Okay, all right.
A normal, quote unquote, again here, adult eats three meals a day. I am a snacker, so.
Okay, like, there we go.
Yeah.
Well, I turned into a snacker, and so then my daughter and I ate a lot more meals together.
Yeah.
But we wanted to prioritize having one of, like, a family meal, right? Where we all sit down and we ask, like, what was the best part of your day, or what was something interesting you learned today, or who did you play with today, depending on which adult you're talking to or child you're talking to, right? So that idea of it as, like, a time, I think, was more important to us to prioritize than as a food moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's part of what meals do, is reinforce norms and expectations around the process of eating, the experience of eating. And part of the experience of eating is eating the things that are on the table. And so while your child is learning, we sit together in this shared space and, you know, we share stories or, you know, talk about what we learned. We also are eating the same food. Mm-hmm. So those are all linked.
That doesn't work out in my household all the time. I will say that.
Those are sometimes linked. So another piece of this that you got into has to do with decisions about, do you have rules about snacking between meals and, you know, what is on the table, what foods are on the table, and who gets to decide what is on the table. So I'm curious, like, obviously you are a snacker or you have become a snacker and mm-hmm. your daughter is a snacker.
I think most toddlers are, like, defined as snackers, right? Because they tend to eat less more frequently than adults do.
Well, Karen McMillan would have us believe that French kids do not snack at all ever.
Right. That's right. I forgot about that
before. So I think one of the points that she makes, to give her credit, is that that the French kids that she is educating us about have developed the stamina to not snack in between meals. Mm-hmm. But even they have an afternoon snack. Mm-hmm. So it's not three meals a day solely. It's three meals a day and, like, a single afternoon snack that's supposed to get them to their late night dinner.
And I feel like that was something that they were grown into, right? Mm-hmm. That was not expected of a baby or a mm-hmm. toddler or Absolutely. Things like that.
Yeah. But one of the things that can influence eating is how hungry a kid is. Mm-hmm. So if you want your kid to eat whatever you put in front of them, they should probably be hungry when you put it down. So rules around snacking can influence some of those things, but also if you just need to get your kid food, then you need to give them food. Like, if they're hungry and the difference between a meltdown is these goldfish, then maybe you just give them the goldfish. Mm-hmm. So the other piece of this is balancing the offerings. Like, when you feed your daughter a meal, is this a little bit of everything? There's a vegetable, there's a fat, there's a protein, or is it, do you focus on, we're just going to do one at a time?
We just give her everything. Mm-hmm. And especially, like, if we're having dessert, we'll just give her dessert on the same plate. Mm-hmm. And just, like, here's all the food.
Yeah.
Take whatever you want kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And then I always make sure that there's, like, some kind of safe food for her, meaning a food that she, like, knows really well and is definitely going to eat. So even mm-hmm. if we're having, like, a bunch of new foods, there's part of a cheese stick, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, like, her thing. Mm-hmm. She's apparently becoming like I was when I was a toddler and just really loves cheese sticks. Or, like, she loves beans. So mm-hmm. if we're having shrimp tacos and she's never had shrimp before, at least there's beans on the plate or something like that.
Yeah.
I have read some stuff about this, and research has led me to believe that if you present all food together, then there's less, like, value associated mm-hmm. to certain foods. So, like, if you don't want kids to just need dessert and crave sugar constantly, then presenting it as, like, here's dinner and there's part of your cookie, right? Mm-hmm. Like, makes it a little bit less like that. But again, I'm not an expert. I've just read stuff that experts have said, and so that has informed yeah. that particular choice.
I have read the same thing, and it is that treating sugar or dessert or some foods like they are rewards or they are off the table unless you act right, or, you know, off the table unless you've earned it, can make those foods seem more important than they really need to be. Mm-hmm. And so kids will end up, like, waiting for the dessert rather mm-hmm. than eating the dinner. It sounds like you have thought a lot about a lot of the different things that a person should consider when feeding a kid mm-hmm. and have come to some conclusions that, as we'll see, lead to less picky eating, which is great. That's Maybe. Good for you.
We'll find out, I guess.
Yeah. So some of these decisions are going to be made for you by circumstance. Mm-hmm. Like, Kevin and I eat dinner at 7:30 and Luke eats dinner at 5:30 and p.m.
Good for whatever that's worth. Yeah, I guess,
for whatever that's worth. And we would love to eat dinner all together, but Kevin's schedule is such that we had to make this decision. Do we want time together as adults? Or does one of us want to eat dinner with Luke, or do we want Luke to wait until 7:30 to eat? Mm-hmm. And bedtime is sacred to us. Mm-hmm. So sleep hygiene, you know, being in bed the same time every day rather than waiting for someone to get off work was mm-hmm. important to us. And frankly, having time to be adults, mm-hmm. you know, that don't have to look after a child for, you know, one meal a day where we get to, I wanted to say, like, look deep into each other's eyes and marvel at our marriage. And
there you go. You know,
all the great decisions we're making.
That's perfect. Can I just say, though, on that? Like,
yeah.
It's really hard that's the thing that has to go.
Yeah.
Right? Like, something has to go.
Yeah.
Whether it's time as a family eating dinner, or it's your job, or it's your time as a couple, or it's whatever. Like, stuff has to go.
Yep.
It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And if what you do doesn't work for my family and what I do doesn't work for your family, then that's honestly just part of the gig, isn't it? Like, it's really hard when these are those types of choices that people have to make. And I think a lot of the idealization in American culture in particular about dinner comes from, like, the 1950s. Mm-hmm. And the payoffs and the trade-offs and the things that people had to decide based upon in the 1950s are not the things that we have to decide upon today.
But also, like, a middle class and not exclusively but mostly white conception of what family looks like, what meals times look like, the Rockwellian picture of, you know, the turkey on the table. So anyway, we all eat breakfast together.
Nice.
That's something.
I'm glad that you get to live out that value, even if it's not in the Rockwellian way.
Yeah. And so the nice thing, I mean, the stressful thing is that you have all of these decisions to make. Mm-hmm. But the nice thing is nothing hinges on any one of those decisions. If you can't make mealtimes happen together, you can do other things like decide what decide what goes on your kid's plate and make sure that there's always something new, that sort of thing.
I think this also applies if you are hosting kids. Mm-hmm. So if you are not used to feeding small children, then you have some kind of a party or a family over, and all of a sudden you are hosting small children, you're going to have to make trade-offs, and I'm sorry. But you had to do that already, even without kids, so it's going to be all right. That idea of, like, how do I do this? What is the practical, which sounds like is where we're going next. I want to highlight that this is true for a lot of people in society, whether they have kids or not.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to be a good host to people, I mean, children or not, there's a...
Children are not good hosts?
No. If you want to be a good host to children or to adults.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry.
Both. Yeah.
I put the clause in the wrong spot. That's all right.
There, you have decisions to make about, how much consideration do I give to their pickiness, to their... you should give a lot of consideration to their allergies, but...
That's a different topic.
Yeah. So, I have another question for you, Abby. Mm-hmm. Does your daughter ever deviate from the meal plan in a given meal, in a given day? You put down these foods. Mm-hmm. She always eats it all, or regularly eats one thing, or...
I think she always eats the safe food, whatever that is. And then she eats varying amounts of other things. There have been a few times when even, like, my husband and I try something new, and then we're like, this is gross. Like, go get a frozen pizza out of the freezer and let's do this over. So I think we don't hold to any particular standards in that regard.
I also use the tactic of dessert is served with the meal. Like, here is your candy, here is your meal, or your cookie, or, like, whatever it is. It is on the same plate as the rest of your meal. And I'm amazed when Luke will start on the dessert, get partway through it, eat the whole meal, and then finish with the dessert.
That's so interesting.
Or sometimes leave the dessert behind. And that, I mean, that blows my mind. Like, there's 3 M&Ms on your plate.
Yeah.
I won't say anything, because if he chose not to eat them, I'm not going to comment on it. But in my head, I'm going, why would you leave those 3 M&Ms? Those are delicious M&Ms. Like, I want those M&Ms.
Right.
And then I eat the M&Ms.
I was going to say, that's the nice thing about being the parent in that scenario. When you're cleaning up, you just eat them.
So some issues that a person might encounter is being unwilling, obviously, to eat some foods, requesting the same food every day, refusing to eat a particular color or texture of food.
Yeah.
And
I get that. I do not like yogurt for its texture. The texture of all yogurt? Well, just if it has granola in it or blueberries or something, it's way better because the texture, I just can't.
But, like, Greek yogurt versus...
Yeah. Like, it's like a soupier version of Greek yogurt. Okay. Same right. sort of texture thing. I totally get that. I have a lot of compassion for kids who are like, this is mushy. I don't want to eat it. Like, I get that. Let me throw some blueberries on it or something for you.
Okay. All right. Cool. Well, some information that can make all of this easier to process. Food neophobia, or fear of new foods, is normal. It tends to happen around age 2 and subsides within a few years.
I'm guessing this is normal because it's like an evolutionary protective mechanism.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Kids are suddenly mobile.
Yep.
And getting into everything.
Yep.
And if they were willing to eat just whatever they find. Oddly, they do sometimes put things in their mouth that I'm like, you put that thing you found on the floor in your mouth, but you won't put the carrot in your mouth. Like, I don't get it. But what are you going to do? Picky eaters are not going to suffer from malnutrition. Like I said it before, and I'm going to say it again. Like, just because someone is a picky eater does not automatically mean that they are malnourished, that their development is going to suffer. Those are not a one-to-one. If you think that your kid isn't getting enough nutrients, go to the doctor. But just because they refuse to eat a certain kind of food or a certain color of food or spicy food doesn't mean that they're going to be malnourished.
So this goes against my gut.
Hmm.
Right? Of like, oh, like you should eat a well-balanced diet in order to be healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So then if a kid is not eating a variety of things, I can see why people would get nervous about that. Mm-hmm. So what is the line then? Is it like when you're serving turkey loaf 2 times a day and dry Cheerios for the other meal?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you have to be at that level to get worried? Or what would be like a warning sign of malnutrition or of not enough variety and nutrients where people should go see the doctor?
I mean, be on the lookout for a kid who has low energy or who isn't developing in the way that you would expect someone that age to develop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're especially underweight,
mm-hmm.
that's something to look out for. If they have low energy, if they are not like talking, or like if they have cognitive impairment, and you know that they are not eating enough. Well, if they have any of those things and it's unexpected for you, go to the doctor. Oh,
mm-hmm.
my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think they're not eating enough and they have other symptoms, then, yeah, this could be a problem. But if they are growing, if they are jumping up and down and, you know, like saying, I demand those chicken nuggets. If they
mm-hmm.
have the energy to demand the chicken nuggets,
mm-hmm.
and you give them the chicken nuggets and they still have the energy, then they're probably fine.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect a lot of the ideas about malnutrition or like suffering nutrition come from adult conceptions of what a good diet looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of adult conceptions about a good diet are based on nonsense.
Okay.
Like, unfortunately, this is not that podcast, but we can recommend podcasts that talk about adult nutrition and what it is, like where our ideas of it come from,
mm-hmm.
and why they're flawed. But kids don't need nearly as much food as we do,
mm-hmm.
and kids end up getting a lot of nutrients from the Cheerios,
yeah.
have
so many nutrients,
so many added vitamins,
mm-hmm.
like you don't need to take an extra like gummy vitamin if you're eating those Cheerios necessarily. You know, again, this is not me giving medical advice. If your doctor says take a gummy vitamin, then take a gummy vitamin. But between turkey loaf, which would have some fat, some protein, and Cheerios, which would have a tiny bit of fiber and, you know, all of these added vitamins, a kid is getting enough that they need to keep growing,
mm-hmm.
and keep having energy throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that this is good and you should put up with it. Like, if it's
yeah.
not working for you, if you are making turkey loaf, stop making turkey loaf. We're going to figure out other things.
But as far as malnourishment,
but,
it seems like a lot of people's worries about that in particular are not necessarily founded in reality, just because kids are getting a lot of vitamins,
mm-hmm.
even if they're only eating a couple of different food sources.
Exactly. And kids tend to eat balanced diets over the course of a week.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we should really think about a balanced diet in terms of your overall intake, as opposed to this meal needs to include
right.
a vegetable, you know, like a
yeah.
leafy green and a protein and a fat and so on.
Mm-hmm. One last thought on this.
Mm-hmm.
If someone did want to go to the pediatrician
mm-hmm.
and say like, hey, I'm concerned about my child's nutrition, whether
mm-hmm.
they're malnourished or not, like, I'm just worried they're not getting enough vitamins and everything. Are there any resources that we have that we can point folks to, especially because this can be a scary conversation mm-hmm. for people. If you're going in and you're telling a doctor, like, I'm not sure I'm feeding my kid right, or I'm not sure my kid is eating enough of what I'm feeding them, that can be a really ripe area for people who are worried about bad interactions with Child Protective Services or things like that to come in. Do we have any resources that we can point people to in the show notes?
Yeah, we'll make sure that we put that in the show notes so that anyone who wants to have that conversation with their provider in a safe way, that we make something available.
Awesome.
Okay, and so last, just bit of information to make this easier to process. Mm-hmm. The more of a battle of wills you make this with your child, the worse it will be for you and the kid. So stop trying so hard. Like, stop trying so hard.
I like that that's a takeaway message that we're providing. Yep. That's lovely. Yep. Thank you for that.
All right, now some information that will make this less easy to process.
Okay.
You don't actually have very much control.
Over what a kid eats.
Over what your kid eats. You cannot make your kid eat anything. And the older they get, the more true it becomes. So at the end of the talk, I'll talk about, like, what you can control.
Okay.
But first, I want to get into the science just a little bit, because sometimes this can be boring. Honestly, like, I read some of these articles, and I was just like, ugh.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. So, I don't know. I don't know if it's about nutrition science. I don't know what the deal is. But some science, I read it, and I'm like, ooh, tell me more. Mm-hmm. Something about these particular set of articles, I was just like, ugh, fine, whatever. Maybe it's because so often the takeaway is like, stop trying so hard.
Mm, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do.
It's like being faced with your own inability to change the course of the world. That's hard. Yeah, yeah. I get that. That makes sense.
Even though the world is what my child eats.
Yeah.
It's so, yeah. So, starting with the scope, and I have a quote for you. Okay. It starts with picky eating.
Okay, here we go. Picky eating is a relatively common problem during childhood, ranging from 8 to 50% of children. Okay, side note, that seems really low to me.
Yeah.
I feel like also 8 should not be qualified as relatively common. That's mm-hmm. okay. All right, returning to the quote. 8 to 50% of children in different samples and is characterized by the toddler or child eating a limited amount of food, restricting intake, particularly of vegetables, being unwilling to try new foods, and having strong food preferences, often leading parents to provide their child a meal different from the rest of the family. End quote.
So what do you think about this definition?
I am suspicious of the use of 8 to 50% as mm-hmm. a number in this regard. Some of this stuff makes a lot of sense to me, like being unwilling to try new foods.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I can see how that would be a problem eventually. Eating a limited amount of food, though, like, we went over in Feeding Littles Part 1 how small a baby's stomach is. They don't get that much bigger between this and being 7 or 8 years old, right? Like, yeah. They get bigger, but, like, well, what is a limited amount of food?
So even from the time a child is, like, under 2 to, like, yeah. 2 to 4 years old,
yeah.
the amount of food that they consume shrinks because from, like, the age of 6 months to 2, a kid is growing at a much larger rate than from, like, 2 to 4.
Interesting.
They're bigger, so you would think that they need to eat more, but
they need to eat
they
less.
Really don't, yeah.
Like, calorie-wise? Like,
yes.
Mass-wise? How is that measured?
I think it's calorie-wise. It's because their growth has slowed down, and so their energy consumption is not as intense.
That's wild.
Mm-hmm. But you think, well, they're bigger, they need to eat more.
Right. But then eating limited amount of food doesn't seem like
it shouldn't be a problem
to me.
So a lot of these things.
That's how they got 8 to 50%.
Exactly.
I see now. Okay.
A lot of the studies, a lot of the perceptions around picky eating are based on self-report studies, are mm-hmm. based on just really things that end up having a lot more to do with parental anxiety than yeah. like measurable differences in children's eating that are measured consistently across like countries, across children, across age ranges, across families.
Yeah.
There is so much inconsistency mm-hmm. in measuring and researching picky eating mm-hmm. that like diagnosing and solving picky eating in your own family would seem like just question marks everywhere. Like, what on earth am I supposed to do?
Which is why if you're already worried about this, it's so easy for this to become a source of anxiety, right? Like, if you're already worried about your kid eating enough food, which, like, to be fair, is a really fair thing to be worried about, and then all of a sudden you add in all these unknowns, of course people are worried about, of course people are joining space programs to, to figure out strategies. Like, this is hard stuff.
And as you can imagine, the more a parent stresses about it, the more they sort of transfer that stress to their kid, or they approach mealtimes with stress. And approaching mealtimes with stress doesn't make kids more open to eating. It's not fun for them anymore. So I also want to point out, this is not an American thing, or a North American thing. Karen LeBillon would have us, I hope that's how you pronounce her name.
I don't know.
Okay. Would have us believe that French kids eat everything. That's not true. There is pickiness in France. Two-year-olds get picky just like in France, just like they do everywhere else. But I saw studies in Germany, the Netherlands, and Singapore all about, like, the same problems that we have here, or the same problems that American parents have. Okay, so I did find one article that I thought summed it up really well. And, of course, it is called Picky Eating in Children, Causes and Consequences.
Nice.
So it's kind of a long quote, but it does a great job of summing everything right up. Abby, if you will.
I'm really distracted by the fact that it uses UK spelling of English a couple times here. Here we go. Okay. Picky eating is a common behavior in early childhood. There is neither a universally accepted definition of picky eating, nor is there agreement on the best tool to identify it. Causes of picky eating include early feeding difficulties, choosiness, especially if the mother is worried by this. Side note, just the mother? Okay. Cool. Back to the quote. Protective factors include the provision of fresh foods and eating the same meal as the child. The consequences for the child's diet include poor dietary variety and a possible distortion of nutrient intakes.
A distortion of nutrient intakes is not the same thing as malnutrition.
It's just like a misunderstanding of what nutrients your kid is getting?
No, just that they're getting more of some things than they need and less of other things that they need, but not to the point that it's a problem.
Okay, so it's not malnourishment. It's just not ideal nourishment.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. For those of you listening, I made a face when I read the distortion of nutrient intakes, and Jennifer was like, let me step in and save Abby on that one. Yeah. So that's what, okay. So back to the quote. With low intakes of iron and zinc, associated with low intakes of meat and fruit and vegetables, being of particular concern. Low intakes of dietary fiber, can't get over the spelling.
F-I-B-R-E is what she's...
As a result of low intakes of fruits and fruit and vegetables are associated with constipation in picky eaters. There may be developmental difficulties in some children with persistent picky eating.
Persistent picky eating is not the same thing as my two-year-old is picky eating. It's my 10-year-old is picky eating and all he eats is turkey,
though. So if this lasts 8 years, you should be concerned.
Absolutely.
All right. There is little evidence, however, for a consistent effect of being a picky eater on growth trajectories. Nice. There may be a small subgroup of children in whom picky eating does not resolve, who might be at risk of thinness during adolescence, or of developing an eating disorder or adult picky eating. These children need to be identified at an early age to enable support, monitoring, and advice to be offered to parents. Strategies for avoiding or ameliorating picky eating include repeated exposures to unfamiliar foods, parental modeling of eating fruits and vegetables and unfamiliar foods, and the creation of positive social experiences around mealtimes. End quote.
So all of those are things I would love to point out that you do with your child.
Oh, yeah.
You repeatedly expose her to foods that she's unfamiliar with. You eat with her.
Yeah.
And you create a positive social experience at mealtimes as opposed to an anxiety-inducing experience at mealtimes. So I saw two specific studies that actually link parental anxiety and picky eating. So just with Owen and the turkey loaf, this isn't anecdote. This is backed up by research that there is a relationship between parents who feel anxiety around their kids and their kids' eating habits and kids who are picky eaters. And In both cases, I don't think that the researchers establish a causal arrow, like a direction, that the kids started picky eating and then the anxiety picked up, or the parents were anxious and then the kids started picky eating. Mm-hmm. But I think the story with Owen and some of what we have talked about is that it's probably bidirectional, mm-hmm. that the more your kid refuses to eat or has a difficult time eating or, like, just has an unpleasant experience with the foods that you give him or her or them, the more anxious you're going to feel about their nutrition and their health. And hopefully, and I'm going to say it again, the lesson that being a picky eater does not automatically mean your child is malnourished, mm-hmm. hopefully that can relieve some of the anxiety. So that even if your kid only wants to eat chicken nuggets tonight, you don't have to feel anxious about it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that tomorrow they're going to eat different things, mm-hmm. but at least you don't have to feel anxious about it.
Right. I do want to flag, though, that, like, I feel better now having you just say, like, oh, look, you did all the things that the study mm-hmm. said you should do. That's awesome. But, like, when I look at this list, a lot of these things are only possible because of the resources that I have available to me. Mm-hmm. So, like, repeat exposure to unfamiliar foods. Like, my family has a food budget that allows mm-hmm. us to try new things mm-hmm. and cool things that we didn't have before, even if they're more expensive than, you know, our typical bean tacos would be.
Yeah.
Parental modeling of eating fruits and vegetables in unfamiliar foods. So, unlike your situation where your husband's work schedule means that you can't all eat together, my husband now has a work schedule. He didn't until 2 years ago, and it's been a noticeable difference, but, like, now has a schedule where we can all eat together. So that parental modeling is a lot easier when you have two parents doing it, not mm-hmm. just one, right? So we're just lucky in that regard now. And the creation of positive social experiences around mealtimes, I don't know, maybe that's something you can create in a lot of different situations. But I've also been known to be like, I really need Eleanor to try this new food. Mm-hmm. I'm going to turn on Cocomelon, mm-hmm. which is my least favorite TV show in the world.
Then do a different one.
No, but it's her favorite.
Well,
yeah. And so then if I turn on Cocomelon and I put a plate of whatever it is in front of her,
she'll eat it.
She'll eat it because she's paying attention to Cocomelon. And so she tries the new thing. That's so positive social experiences around mealtimes is like the only tricky one for me. And I'm really lucky in that regard.
Yeah. Well, so this gets us into what the heck are you supposed to do? And again, I want to point out that there are a lot of decisions that you have to make. There are a lot of strategies. That means that if you can't do one, there's others. If you can't mm-hmm. do all of them, don't assume that it's not going to work. This mm-hmm. isn't a question of how do I put all of these things into practice so that I can have success, but rather how can I ease some of the pain of picky eating mm-hmm. by putting like some or one of these into practice. And I want to point out that I'm pretty sure all of them are things that work on adults too. So if there is an adult in your life that is a picky eater.
Especially if it's you.
Yeah, especially if it's you. If you want to be a more adventurous food eater. And, you know, we've talked about that in the cheese episode. That mm-hmm. Adventurous eating is fun. Do it. Maybe some of these insights can help you loosen up for yourself. If you don't have kids, if you have, like, close friends or family members that you, like, wish would be more adventurous, you can suggest some of these things. If you have acquaintances that are picky eaters, do not say anything. That is not your place.
I'm glad we're laying out the boundaries.
That is none of your business. like, some of these excellent insights and suggestions come from Emily Oster, both Cribsheet and The Family Firm. She did a much deeper dive into the research than I did because she was writing a book on it.
Yeah.
And she found some patterns that I think are worth pointing out. Kids who are treated for picky eating tend to be healthy. All right? Remember that. Seriously. I think that's the last time I say it, but I don't know. It could happen again. Nutrition studies are fraught. Like, they'll say eating particular kinds of foods are better for your health or worse for your health, but Emily's meta-analysis found that people who eat more expensive foods have better health. It's not because some kinds of lettuce are better for you than other kinds of lettuce. It's other things. It's access to healthcare. It's more consistent access to, like, more fresh foods and vegetables.
So basically, there's something else causing this. Like, exactly. If you can afford to eat expensive lettuce, you can also afford to go to the doctor when mm-hmm. you need to and things like that. So it's a different thing is causing those two things rather than one of them causing the exactly. other, right?
Exactly. And so, like, be wary of nutrition studies that say things like, you need to eat blueberries for your health. People who eat blueberries are in better health. Mm-hmm. Well, blueberries are expensive foods.
Not if you get them frozen.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Frozen blueberries.
And frozen blueberries have yeah. a lot of the same nutrients.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, fresh vegetables and fruits are great, but frozen fruits and vegetables are also nutritious.
And canned.
And canned fruits and vegetables are also nutritious. So don't be fooled by the nutrition studies that try to say otherwise. She also consistently saw a relationship between what kids ate and when they were young and what they ate when they're older. So kids who eat more vegetables at age 1 eat more vegetables at age 6. Also, kids who like Skittles at age 5 like Skittles at age 11.
What's the variation on that variable? Tell me. How many kids were like, no, I don't like Skittles?
Well, I think, so the point of that study was, are tastes consistent?
Mm-hmm.
And what it found is that even if they like things in addition to Skittles, they continue liking Skittles.
Okay, so you can, just because your kid loves cheese, doesn't mean that someday they won't love bread and cheese.
Exactly.
Or blueberries and cheese.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
But if your kid likes a lot of different things at age 1, mm-hmm. when that neophobia hasn't kicked in,
mm-hmm.
then they're going to be more likely to like a bunch of things after that neophobia has kicked in.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. Parents who eat a lot of different things, who they end up having kids who grow up to eat a lot of different things. The other direction is true, too. Parents who are picky have kids that are picky.
But you also could be not eating a lot of things for reasons other than being picky.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
So this is where preparation really matters, right? Where, like, if you have a can of beans
mm-hmm.
and you serve it with salt and pepper one mm-hmm. night, and then the next night you serve it with taco seasoning, mm-hmm. which people really underestimate how good it is to put taco seasoning mm-hmm. on beans, black yeah. beans. I don't know if you've ever tried this.
Unless
this
you have my child
yeah.
who won't eat pepper.
Right.
Or anything spicy.
Yeah. So the idea of, like, you have to work around your kid's pickiness, right? But if you do this different preparation of the same thing,
mm-hmm.
from what I've read, that counts as different types of food because you're exposing your kid to new flavor profiles, new textures. If you serve beans whole one night, serve beans refried or smashed the next night, like that type of thing.
Exactly.
So I've also heard that, like, even if what you have to work with is a can of beans, you can still make that different across the course exactly. of a couple of days, right?
Yeah. So you're picking up on advice point 1, exposure. Repeatedly offer your kids the same food in different forms. Puree it, chop it, serve it whole, serve it in shapes. Honest to goodness, there were things that I wanted Luke to eat. I'm thinking about waffles. He wouldn't eat Eggo waffles. Do you know, I may have already told you this, but it took like 2 months of trying before he would eat chicken nuggets. But whatever, back to waffles. But so I was trying to get him to eat waffles because it was an easy breakfast food that was less expensive than the bars that he really liked.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, it would be nice to have a financial break on breakfast sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I started cutting the Eggo waffles into the shape of a star.
Yeah. Yep.
Eating a star is exciting. Eating a dumb circle, who wants to do that? And so, like, the same food, but now I've cut it into pieces. And he, mm-hmm. and it wasn't that he wouldn't eat the cut off parts.
Yeah.
He would eat the parts that had been cut away from the star as well.
Yeah.
It's just now this food is slightly different and it's exciting.
I will also say that most frozen waffles are fully cooked. So you can give them to kids frozen.
Yeah.
And if they're teething, that's a really, really great hack. Mm-hmm. Like, all of a sudden it's like, oh, you don't want a waffle? What about a frozen waffle?
Yeah.
Uncooked waffle. It's really cooked. Don't worry. But, like, it's amazing how much just that little – or, like, freezing grapes.
Mm-hmm.
Cut grapes and then put them in the freezer. And they're, like, candy. Then.
Yeah.
Like, they're so sweet when they come out.
Yeah. The other piece of this that we have talked about, I think, that's relevant especially to your brother, she called it something else. Oh, gosh, I didn't write it down. It was very silly, but it was like associational pressure or something like that. It, like, had a very fancy name. DIP.
Yeah.
Pairing vegetables with something, anything, like a dip of any sort, increases consumption.
This is how we get Eleanor to eat potatoes.
Yeah.
We serve either, like, some kind of sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Bernaise sauce is really popular in Danish cuisine. Or when we have curry. Curry is her favorite food.
Mm-hmm.
And she will only eat potatoes when we have curry if she dips them in the curry. But, like, that's smart the idea, girl. Right? Just dip. Anything with dip. Mm-hmm. And who doesn't love a good, like, butterboards are a big thing right now. Mm-hmm. Like, even adults love dips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my kid does not.
I'm sorry about that.
Will not dip anything
even in adults, anything. But not Luke.
Yep. No, but he will sit and eat his broccoli.
Mm-hmm.
He will not dip his broccoli.
Interesting.
So he is picky in ways that I don't always, that are not always inconvenient.
Mm.
Like, that's fine. I don't have to buy dip.
Yeah.
No fair. Problem.
Not another dish to clean.
Yeah, exactly. So you had picked up on earlier privileging the food that you're trying to push without forcing it.
Mm-hmm.
So don't say you can't have ice cream until you eat your carrots, because now the kid knows that carrots are bad and ice cream is great.
Mm-hmm.
But rather use autonomy supportive prompts. Here's some carrots. I'm still cooking the chicken, but I'll give you the chicken as soon as it's ready. And then you don't mention the carrots anymore. Like, you put them on the kid's plate, mm-hmm. and walked away. The kid can choose to eat the carrots or not, but it's their decision. And so that's one of the strategies that people will use if they're trying to get a kid to eat more of a particular food or just get a kid to eat a larger variety of foods.
Mm-hmm.
So that helps. And also keep in mind, because that can be so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
If you want your kid to eat more variety of foods, that means you have to serve a larger variety of foods, which mm-hmm. means you have to buy a larger variety of foods. So keep in mind, you need to give them a much smaller portion of the food that you're trying to introduce than you really think is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So you might think, oh, I'm going to put a plate full of carrots down, you know, or like a handful of carrots. Put a single carrot round. You know, like sometimes you can get them cut already. Or if you get a baby carrot,
mm-hmm.
and you cut the baby carrot in half, and then you cut the baby carrot in half again, mm-hmm. and then you give your kid that. As opposed to, I need to buy, you know, I need to serve them a whole bunch of them, mm-hmm. and then throw away what they don't eat.
It really seems like a lot of the problematic behaviors that adults do in this regard come from treating kids like adults.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, oh, you need a full salad because that's what I need. Mm-hmm. You need to eat these three things in one meal because that's what I need to eat in one meal. Or yeah. What I think I need to eat in one meal, right?
I think it's a combination of assuming that kids' needs are the same as adult needs,
mm-hmm.
but also failing to respect a child's autonomy.
Yeah.
They're not adults, but you still have to respect them as a separate being from you.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they don't do the thing that you told them to do, it's upsetting. But what adult, you know, what other person in the world automatically does everything you tell them to do?
Mm-hmm.
If you put a plate in front of your spouse or a friend or, you know, an acquaintance or a coworker and said, you need to finish this before mm-hmm. you're allowed to get up and do anything else,
mm-hmm.
they wouldn't be friends with you anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, that would be unacceptable. But we think that that's a great way to get kids to eat things. And it's just not. So another aspect of this, I just said treat kids with autonomy, but do not offer alternatives.
I don't feel like this is as much about kid autonomy as it is about parent sanity.
That's right. And setting a reasonable boundary for yourself and respecting yeah. your own autonomy. You are not a short order cook.
Even if you are,
yeah,
you don't have to yeah. be in this moment.
Yeah. You're not at work right now. This can also make it less expensive. If you are making two meals every night because you make a meal for your kid and then you make the backup meal when they don't eat the first meal, stop doing that. This is how you get turkey loaf. Make one meal. If they don't eat what you provided, they might be hungry, but also that might be okay. If they go hungry for one meal, and this is where I agree with Karen LeBillon, if they go hungry for one meal, they will be okay. They also might eat the next meal.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons they might have skipped the meal that you put in front of them is that they weren't hungry.
Mm-hmm.
So pay attention to when you last offered a snack. If it was too close to mealtime, maybe move snack time up or back, whatever the time
order is.
Yeah, whatever that direction is. Create a larger gap between snack time and dinner time, and make it clear to the kid in gentle terms, this is the meal.
Okay, but I do want to say, and be picky about this, get it. I do feel like the no alternatives rule is maybe one that I'm flouting by always making sure Eleanor has a safe food.
Oh, no.
But this I think that has really helped.
No, so this isn't something that Emily Oster talked about, but it is something, one of my favorite Instagram nutritionists to follow. The account is called Kids Eat in Color.
I love that account. Okay. I love that account so much. And do you know what you were saying before about like how much kids actually need to eat? She takes pictures of them and posts them on a fairly regular basis. That has been really helpful for me in setting my expectations. Yeah.
And she talks a lot as well about you set down a plate of food. It should not be a plate of food that the kid has never seen before.
Yeah, that's hard for anybody. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. There should always be some safe thing so that if all they eat is that, that's okay, but...
That's different than making a whole different meal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so then the last point is eating together and peer pressure can help. So you know, we talked about, like, eat the meal with your kid. If that's not possible, lean as much as possible on opportunities to have other kids eat food in front of your kid.
Yeah.
I know it's true with Luke that... if we are out to dinner, I don't know how often we're out to dinner with other kids. That's probably not fair to say. But like his cousin's birthday party, things like that, where he's watching other kids eat something that he is usually suspicious of.
Yeah.
Pizza, for instance.
Yeah.
Because my kid eats chicken breasts and broccoli, but not pizza or chicken nuggets. I love my weirdo. But so, yeah, like, he sees other kids eating pizza, and he goes, oh, I should eat pizza.
Yep.
And so now suddenly he eats pizza. So, yeah, lean on peer pressure. Be careful with restricted foods. If you say they can't have candy, they will inevitably want candy. Instead, provide a boundary in which the would-be forbidden food is allowed. Like, you can say things like, we eat candy on the weekends. We eat candy after dinner. We don't make candy contingent on finishing a meal, or like you can't have candy until you eat the broccoli. At dinner, I let Luke pick out a candy to eat with his dinner. I control the size, but he gets to decide which one.
So you're giving him choices.
Exactly. Sometimes he forgets. And I don't remind him. Like, if he forgets that he gets to pick out a candy, I go, okay, fine, whatever.
He's going to listen to this podcast episode someday and be so mad at you.
How many candies did I miss out on, Mom? Sometimes he picks candies and I'm just like, really? There's so much better stuff here to choose from.
But he's leaving those for you then.
Oh, well, I mean, I don't eat candy with every meal.
Maybe that's your
that's
fault,
problem. That's my bad choice. I want to talk again about, like, how I worried that, like, feeding my kid was going to be expensive, especially when he eats a meal separate from my husband and I. But serving foods that I know he likes, and so I know I can keep them on hand. I can almost buy them in bulk. And then being really stingy about, like, I'm going to buy something new. If I know I'm going to eat a lot of it, then fine. You know, I'll let him try a little bit, and I know I'm going to eat the rest. But if I know it's something that I don't particularly love, then sometimes I'll say, eh, whatever. Like, he doesn't need to like that food. It's really just not that important. But again, the repeated exposure thing, the, like, trying different things frequently, like new food becoming a safe thing to do as opposed to something to fear.
And a fun thing, hopefully, too.
Exactly, yeah. And a fun thing. So I've also seen some research says you have to taste a food, which I'm going to say is different than being exposed to the food. Exposure is the thing is on your plate.
Yeah.
You picked it up. You smelled it. Maybe you tasted it. Maybe you didn't. But you have to taste a food at least 12 times. Other research says 8 times. Other research says 20 times. I don't know what's wrong with these people that they can't get it together. You definitely have to taste something multiple times if you don't like it before you can get to the point that you do like it. But you can go from, I don't like this food, to, yeah, all right, this is fine. That's how I am with celery. I used to be the person who gagged when eating celery, and now I can eat celery. I don't like it.
Olives, too. I think I like olives, though. Well, that's so I may great. Be a better conversion story than you.
Yes, you are a better conversion story, but I'm a good moving away from picky eating story.
There we go. Yeah,
I will also I like say, that. The my success story is, I used to be like Luke. He definitely got my palate. I couldn't eat anything spicy ever. Mm-hmm. Like, pepper was too spicy. That was me. And then sometime, I had to be around, like, 20 years old. I went, this is unsustainable. There is spicy food in the world. And so I started introducing just a little bit of hot sauce, like 2 drops of hot sauce in my eggs. And then a little bit of more hot sauce, and then a little bit of more. And over the course of 5 years, I turned myself into someone who likes spicy food.
Now imagine if you were forced to do that by someone who had more power than you.
Oh, that would be awful.
That's why it's hard to be a parent.
Yeah. So stop trying so hard.
Here we go. It strikes me that coming to the end of this 2-episode journey now, one major theme in both of these things has been, like, feeding little kids is really hard. Even when feeding little kids is not something that you're actually aware of because of how fetal development works, even then it's really hard. And then when you have to be, like, convincing a cognizant toddler that they need to eat a certain food, that's really, really hard. So wherever you're at in your journey with feeding kids, we see the hard work that you're putting into this. And I hope that you take Jennifer's advice and not worry about it as much if you've been worrying about it. And I hope that you take the advice we had in the last episode as well of, like, root somebody else on. Like, if you're not feeding kids right now, or if you are, like, shout out to all of the other parents in your area or all the people who are trying to make this work. Because feeding kids is something that millions of people do every single day. And yet it's actually a really difficult task, no matter the age of the kid. For different reasons at different ages of the kid, but it's really hard, and we're rooting for you.
Yeah.
And you're not alone.
That's right. Yeah. And thank you for listening, and as a reminder, you can find us on Instagram, on our website, on Patreon if you would like to support us. You don't have to support us. Please just keep listening if you're enjoying the journey.
And if you do support us on Patreon, the couple of bucks that you give us will probably go toward buying more chicken nuggets for my kids and more chicken breasts for Jennifer's. That's so right.
'Cause you know, we talked about, like, eat the meal with your kid. If that's not possible, lean as much as possible on opportunities to have other kids eat food in front of your kid. So, I know. So,
sorry.
Not in a weird way.
No, it's just, we should have been more deliberate about this when we had Luke and Eleanor eat dinner together, what, 2 nights ago? And we,
No, it's fine. Like, I did not see that as, like, a strategy opportunity.
But you saw what happened, right? Like, Luke was eating fine, and Eleanor was playing, and then Eleanor pulled out, like, a chair and started playing with the chair, and then Luke went and grabbed the chair, and was like, I need the chair, too.
I need the chair,
too, and the next thing we knew, neither kid was eating.
Yeah, that's true.
So it works both ways, just saying.
That is true.
It works both ways.
Yeah.